Psalm 2. We'll read the whole psalm together. Psalm 2. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, you are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will rule them with an iron scepter. You will dash them to pieces like pottery. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you be destroyed in your way. For his wrath can flare up in a moment. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. We are slowly drawing towards the end of our series of messages in the first and second psalm of the Bible. And I hope this introduction to the entire book of Psalms has whetted your appetite to read and study and sing from this first hymn book of the church, the Old Testament church. I hope you can see why it proved such a rich store of edification for God's people for hundreds upon hundreds of years. And though we are not supposed to limit ourselves to the book of Psalms, because the revelation of God, the special and unique revelation of God, continued into the New Testament era, we nonetheless impoverish ourselves when we close off the book of Psalms and completely look elsewhere. Because no doubt about it, it is rich, especially when you take the New Testament light and shine it upon those Old Testament pages, as we have been doing in looking at these first two Psalms. Last time we were looking at the first part of the 11th verse. And if you have been here, you will appreciate that we have used a picture, a situation to appreciate our way through this psalm. And the picture that we have been using is that of watching a play on a stage. And therefore, every three verses, we have imagined ourselves watching a scene in that play. In the first section, we had an opportunity to see human beings up in arms against God and against his anointed one. The time it was being written, that anointed one was David, King David. But obviously it was pointing to the greater king, Jesus. And we saw how human beings don't want him to rule over them. The curtains closed, and when they opened again, we saw God's reaction in heaven. And we noticed that he was not afraid of what was happening on earth. No, he was still full of confidence, laughing off the madness of human beings. And in the next moment being angry about this kind of rebellion in God's own world. And declaring with all the force of omnipotence that I have established my king upon my holy hill. In other words, daring us to try and rise up against him. Then the curtains closed. When they opened again, we saw Jesus, the anointed one, also showing something of his confidence despite what was happening on earth. And basically his confidence came from the covenant, the eternal covenant made with God the Father, in which in his efforts on earth, he would merit that place of mediator and consequently bring in his own people, take possession of the earth, and at the same time punish all who resist his rule. Dash them to pieces like pottery. And the curtains closed. Now we are in the last section, and we are making our way safely through this last scene. And in it, we have seen the town crier coming now to announce to us, in the light of what we have heard from heaven, how should we respond? And clearly, you do not want to be seen with the rebellious crowd anymore. In the light of what you have heard from heaven, you will not listen to the kings of the earth and the rulers who are saying, let us throw off the rule of this king and his God. Instead, the town crier is appealing to us to be wise, to be warned, and to the question, how can I be wise? How can I show that I am indeed wise? The answer is what we have seen in verse 11. And it is to serve the Lord with fear and to rejoice with trembling. We looked at this serving the Lord with fear the last time and saw that was essentially submitting to God's demand upon your life to serve him with godly fear for the rest of your life. To yield yourself to him. And if you are not yet doing so, you are living on borrowed time. You are living dangerously, as we shall see, the Lord willing, this coming week. Because the Son can easily break out in wrath upon you and destroy you in a second. But today, we go on to the last part. And in it, we want to see that submitting to God's demand does not mean what so many people think. It does not mean a miserable existence henceforth. In fact, quite the opposite. It means the acquisition of true joy. And oh, that we may listen to this. Because the second part of verse 11 says, and rejoice with trembling. Rejoice with trembling. What's a corrective to a lot of people's thinking? You see, the chief reason why people resist the demand of God upon their lives to submit to his rule is this preconceived notion that to do so is to bring their present so-called happiness to an instant end. they have been brought to think that to live for God, to surrender to God, is to end up in miserable enslavement. You can understand why. Because in the picture that is there before us, where King David is actually going in a physical way to neighboring nations and demanding that they submit to his rule, you and I know that whenever kings of a foreign nation came and took over your country, your people, inevitably they were reduced to slaves, to miserable slaves, because that king did not care about you. You were reduced to the rest of your life being lived in terrible labor for a foreign monarch. And therefore, it makes sense that your leaders should say, come on guys, let us fight to the last man. Let's put up a gallant fight. Why should we and our children and our children's children live the rest of their lives as mere tools of production? That's not right. That's not fair. Let us fight. And so to the question in verse 1, why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? You can well understand the answer being, let us break their chains, let us throw off their fetters. In other words, let's refuse this miserable enslavement that they want to bring upon us. We need to be a free people so that we can be a joyful people. And you can be sure that that is exactly the same mistake that people make concerning Christianity. Somehow in their minds, they cannot imagine how you can be happy without being in sin. It's inconceivable. Because to them, the two go together. Disobedience, rebellion, doing what you want to do is supposed to be the way to happiness. And therefore, if your heart causes you to be involved in an illegitimate love affair, well, that's where happiness is, and that's the way they go. If your heart causes you to go for beer parties, well, that's where the happiness is, and that's where they want to go. Could this be the reason why you resist God's demand upon your life to give up your rebellion, to submit your life to Him? Could it be that somehow, at the back of the back of the back of your mind is a fear that your joy, your happiness will come to an end. That you will be sorry that you gave up your sin. That you will be miserable from now onwards. Just be honest with yourself. Could that be your mentality? That you want to be happy, and to be happy and be a Christian are two things that don't mix. And so you have voted for happiness and consequently voted against the Christian faith. Well, clearly, the town crier here corrects that false view. And he does so by making rejoice a fitting parallel of serve the Lord. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. Generally speaking, Hebrew poetry functions in parallels. And the parallel statements are meant to provide a stereo effect and consequently enriches expression. So, when the writer here says, serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling, he's not really saying two different things. He is saying the same thing from two different perspectives. It's like the first time he looks with his left eye, and the second time he looks with his right eye. But by looking with the two eyes, you are able to give depth to what you are seeing. That's the richness of Hebrew poetry. And so, when he refers to serving the Lord, or maybe let's jump that a little bit, fear and trembling, I'm sure you can see that it's the same thing, because it's fear that makes you tremble, it's trembling that's a result of fear. It's exactly the same thing. The serving the Lord has been made a parallel with rejoice. Basically the same thing he is saying. In other words, true joy is only found in true service to the true and living God. How can that be, you may ask? Well, let me put it this way to you. You see, false religion and sin are the things that in fact lead to a miserable enslavement. Wherever false religion is, people are in a state of morbid fear. That is what makes false religion thrive. It is that people are threatened with all kinds of unexplainable fears. If they do this, they will die. If they do not do this, they will die. And consequently, life is lived in a constant state of fear. The fear of the priests, the fear of the religious rituals that are there, the fear of the unknown, the fear of ancestral spirits, the fear of this and the fear of that, and therefore everything they do is done out of fear. You go among cultish worshippers. You go among a people that worship in a false religion, and you tell me whether you're going to see a people there full of joy. Tell me. Full of liberty. Tell me. It's completely absent. In fact, most of their rituals are done at night. In the darkness, behind bushes, where people have their faces painted. And even the way the people are dancing there, it's a dance of death. They're just hoping it's not your death they're dancing about. You know what I'm talking about. The Christian faith comes in to put an end to all that. We'll come to that later. But we can say exactly the same thing with respect to sin. Sin also has the same effect. Rebellion against the true ruler of our life. Let's begin with the example of King David. He was going to nations. And he was saying to those nations, yield yourselves to King David, who is exercising his monarchy under the rulership of Jehovah, the God of the universe. That's the one under whom you must come to serve. Now, the truth is that if these people under their king were to yield themselves to King David, in fact, their lives would be better. Because while they were living under their own monarchs, their monarchs were the end of all. They did not live as people who were mere stewards and managers under God. No! And consequently, most of them were oppressive tyrants. Most of them were autocratic dictators, and most of them were tormenting despots. You know that. Many a people living under such kings were killed simply because the king admired the man's wife. That's all. Just because he admired the person's property. Just because when they were children, they fought over wire cars. Now, having grown up, he says, you'll see. And consequently, the people were actually suffering under injustice simply because it was in the hands of a person who was a law unto himself. And we need to realize that it is when you are under a king, under rule that is not in obedience to God, that you actually suffer. That's when you do not have true joy. And you go to any nation that Christianity has not yet visited, and you find exactly the same thing in a physical, natural context. You find a people living their lives in absolute fear. We can apply the same in the Christian realm. When a person is living in rebellion, are they really happy? You are adults here. Okay, we do have a few children, but you know. Are they really happy? Now, granted, if you go to a beer hall, you will find people happy, laughing. Everybody, they the whole evening. And the more they drink, the more they that nobody can hear anybody else. Before you know it, a beer bottle flies across. And a few people get angry and jump across, and you have to stop fight after fight. People end up going home bruised, blood trickling down their faces, and so on. Is there happiness at their home? Go there and see whether the children and their wives at home are happy. See what happens when that gentleman arrives home, if he arrives at all. It's misery. It's arguments. It's quarrels. It's fights. It's marriage breakdown. It's children orphaned. Etc., etc. It's not happiness. Yes, for a moment. But it gives birth to sorrow. Isn't that what the wise man tells us in Proverbs chapter 23? I'll just read two verses from there. You can read a little further if you want. Proverbs 23. Verse 29. has war? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaints? Who has needless bruises? Who has bloodshot eyes? Certainly not a dedicated Christian. Certainly not. Listen to the answer. Those who linger over wine, who go to sample bowls of mixed wine. And the point is obviously made that sin produces sorrow. It's holiness that produces true happiness. I'd like to challenge you. If you honestly think Christians are miserable, do a little experiment. Spend 1 month in a non-Christian home, and then another month in a Christian home, and then come and tell me. Come on. I'm challenging you. Which home will you find true happiness in? I'm not saying that when they are all drunk, they will not all be singing, "He's a jolly good fellow, he's a jolly good fellow." But you wait until the following morning when they're saying, "Oh, my headache, any panado," you wait. They may pretend for a day or two because they've got you as a visitor. But I doubt that they will manage to pretend 1 whole month. True colors will soon show. Or better still, go to the gathering of non-Christians and the gathering of Christians. And here is my question. Where are the people singing with joy? You see, the Christian church is a place where you find singing. Joyful singing. Because that's where joy truly is. The Apostle Paul can say, "Rejoice in the Lord always." And again I say rejoice. Because true Christians alone, those who are walking with the Lord, those who are serving Him day and night, those are the people who really, really, really know joy. So where is this notion coming from? That if you become a Christian, you're going to be sad. Where? Apart from the fact that it's an empty lie of the devil. Where do you get this notion? Now, the town crier, having spoken about serving the Lord as being a joyful occupation, is careful that we do not lose sight of the fact that even in that joy, God still demands obedience to Him out of reverent fear. And so He says, "Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling." That is the nature of the joy that God expects from His people. You see, when David was speaking like this to the nations, he was basically saying that yes, you will know true freedom, you will know true liberty, but it's not going to make you ungovernable. That now you simply do as you please. The kind of liberty being enjoyed, if we can call it enjoyment, in Baghdad today. Where one moment everybody is happy the tyrant is gone, the next day now you're all squatting in your homes, trembling out of fear that a suicide bomber might pass through and blow you into pieces. That kind of failure to see that God's liberty is a liberty in obedience to His law. Is something that needs to be quickly addressed, and it is being addressed here. It must be a joy tempered with fear, with the recognition of who God is, in His power, in His sovereignty, and that you are to be obedient to Him as a slave. Look at the way in which this contrast is captured in Psalm 95. Quickly, Psalm 95. It says this, come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before Him with thanksgiving and extol Him with music and song. And clearly you can appreciate the joy, the happiness, the excitement, the liberty, freedom that is there, because we are the people of God. He's been so good to us. But quickly look also at verse 6. The picture changes. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For He is our God, and we are the people of His pasture, the flock under His care. And listen to the kind of warnings they get. Today, if you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts. Verse 11. So I declared on oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest. So you don't just get carried away with the fact that away with those devilish priests who were ruling us out of morbid fear. And therefore now let's just do whatever we want to do. That's half the truth. We're not going from that enslavement where now we can do anything we want. We're going from being servants of these servants of death, and we are now servants of the living God. And so we rejoice with trembling, with reverent fear. We still live under another ruler. You see, it's the joy of children in a well-ordered home. They are happy, but they're not jumping around on the lawn suit like monkeys, hanging on to the chandeliers in the ceiling, and throwing bottles at the television set and saying, you know, we are free, it's our home. No. They're happy, but well ordered. And when father barks out orders, they are up and about doing what they ought to do. And yet, they're happy. Happy. That's God's order of things. And friends, that is true Christian joy. That's the state that God demands of us. That's the joy that is going to fill heaven. When we get there, we will be full of joy, but we will not be disorderly. We're going to be worshipping there in true reverent fear, for God is on the throne. And yet, full of joy, full excitement, as the redeemed of the Lord come marching into heaven, and everlasting joy is upon their heads. I want to ask, Is that your joy? You call yourself a Christian. Is it a joy that always has an eye on the smile of the Father? And upon gazing a frown on his face, a tremor passing through your being, wanting to reorder things in your life, because this joy is not profligate. It's not a joy that is disobedient. It is a joy that is concerned about God and His joy in my life. That alone is true joy. True Christian joy. And thankfully, it fills the earth. Where true Christians are, look there. And you will see that when they submitted to God, they did not become joyless. No. In fact, they, and they alone, are the truly joyful people. So then, is Satan using this age-old lie upon you that God does not want you to be happy? That Christianity is a killjoy? That when you surrender your life of sin, that when you give up your rebellion, you're going to be in a miserable existence? Is he using that lie upon you and consequently keeping you back from the Christian faith? It's the same lie he used upon Adam and Eve and consequently made them commit the first sin in human history. And we have been paying for it since then. When he said to them, in fact, God just doesn't want you to be like him. That's why it's keeping you away from eating from this tree. They believed the lie. They ate. And indeed, misery immediately came into their lives. Don't believe the devil. Don't. As I have already challenged you, look around and see who the truly joyful people are. Even at your workplace, look around. Who are the truly joyful people? Look around. If you've got real Christians in your home, and I mean real Christians, look and compare. God alone wants you to be truly happy. And consequently, He invites you, as we shall be seeing next week, to kiss the Son, to yield your life to Jesus Christ, to give up your rebellion, to surrender your life to Him. It is only as you give up sin and you give your life to Jesus Christ that you experience real joy, lasting joy, a joy that you cannot get anywhere else. It is only after that that you begin to live life with a capital L. Oh, I plead with you today. You have known the lies of the evil one. Satanic joy is the wriggling of a worm in the water, hooked by a fisherman, and you are deceived by it. You put your mouth on it, and yes, it may taste nice in the mouth, but before you know it, you have been roasted and you are sitting on somebody's plate as his dinner. You know what I'm talking about. Those of us who've been Christians long enough know that today, those same friends of ours who laughed at us when we turned to Christ are a miserable existence. We meet them, we look at them, and we feel sorry. The world has finished them. Finished. Don't let Satan deceive you. If you really, really want to rejoice, and I know you do, indeed God knows you do, He is saying, come to me, that you might have life and have it more abundantly. Come to me, and you will join the thousands upon 10,000 voices on earth and in heaven that are singing joyfully. And you will join that eternal choir singing in true joy, because that's what God wants for you. Oh, will you not give up your rebellion today? Will you not go to Jesus Christ in true humility and surrender your life to Him? Ask Him to be your Savior. I assure you, you will know true joy. Amen.